It's a nice day for a walk, but it's always a nice day for a walk in sunny California. And if you're ever in the San Fernando Valley area, you should consider visiting the Japanese Garden, located in the Lake Balboa district. It's a beautiful place for a stroll and uses recycled rainwater for the lake and pond, which has a funny smell that you get used to. But despite the strange odor, it's a peaceful and relaxing place to spend the afternoon. There's lots of koi fish and turtles swimming around, waterfalls, manicured gardens, and blooming roses in the springtime, which make it look like a paradise. But besides the streams and fountains and mystical landscape, there's also one other unique feature of this tranquil gem situated in the middle of Los Angeles. And that's the structure that you see located to the right of the screen. Does it look familiar to you at all? If you're a fan of the Star Trek series, this is the location where they filmed the scenes with the Starfleet Academy on Earth, also referred to as the Space Academy, used for the education and training of individuals for service in Starfleet. The Academy motto was Ex Astris Scientia, in Latin meaning knowledge comes from the stars. The Space Academy was said to be founded in the year 2161, or established in some form before the founding of the Federation, or the United Federation of Planets, the name for the fictional interstellar government that sent Captain Kirk, Mr. Spock, and the crew of the Starship Enterprise on its mission of peaceful exploration. Commonly referred to as the Federation, it was introduced in the television show Star Trek and represented an interstellar union of planetary governments that agreed to exist semi-autonomously under a single central government based on the principles of universal liberty, rights, and equality, and to share their knowledge and resources in peaceful cooperation, scientific development, space exploration, and mutual defense. The total number of formal member worlds was over 150 in the 24th century, and at its height, it numbered 350 members and encompassed 8,000 light-years of space. Unlike its imperial rivals, who derive power from a single species subjugating other races, the Federation's various member worlds joined willingly and were equals in the Federation's democratic society. While Star Trek was a fictional series, there are those that believe it was based on reality, as there have been recent disclosures, especially regarding the events surrounding World War II, which imply that humanity has a parallel yet secret space program which was based on technology innovations achieved by nationalist Germany before, during, and after World War II, which has been effectively hidden from the general public for the past 75 years. The most common question I get is that if the Germans indeed had advanced technology, such as anti-gravity and flying saucers, then why did they lose the war? If the Germans had the ability to reach the moon and possibly establish a lunar base, then why didn't they use their UFOs to defeat the Allies? And that's a good question. And let me answer it like this. Even though Floyd Money Mayweather is recognized as the best pound-for-pound boxer in the world, with an undefeated record of 50 wins and 0 losses, a man of athletic talent, technical skill, and recognized as the best defensive boxer to ever step in the ring. But if Money Mayweather were to agree to fight against yours truly, and I had 20 other clones of me, that means 20 of me against one Mayweather at the same time, we would beat Mayweather in the first round. Mayweather is 5'8" and 150 pounds. I'm 6'4", about 230 pounds. And if there were 20 of me simultaneously punching him at the same time, That means 40 fists. His superior skills, talent, and boxing ability will not save him. And likewise, Germany absolutely had superior scientists, technology, and equipment, but they could not compete against the manufacturing capabilities of the United States. And having a few anti-gravity prototypes could not stop thousands more planes carpet bombing your supply lines, thousands of more tanks, and at least 10 to 1, if not 20 to 1, of all military supplies, including more soldiers. That said, the Germans knew the writing was on the wall halfway through the war, and while they were retaining hope until the end that they would find a way to develop their technology enough to turn the war around, they did not want to expose their technology to the enemy and move their most advanced developments to their Antarctic base, where after surrendering the German mainland in 1945, they defeated the Allies in 1946, who invaded Antarctica with 3 aircraft carriers, 4,500 troops, and what is still publicly called a scientific expedition, codenamed Operation High Jump. Of course, the following year, after the Allies suffered a humiliating defeat in Antarctica, the world became aware of the Roswell incident, where a UFO, or flying saucer, crashed into the Nevada desert, and within a few weeks, the CIA was set up, and the media informed the nation it was a weather balloon, while conspiracy theorists insisted it was little green or gray men, anything but tall Aryan men with German accents. From then on, UFO sightings continued, as well as a new phenomena in the early 50s known as contactees, or people that claimed to not only see round saucer-shaped craft, but interacted with people that claimed to be from Venus or Mars, with striking features and often long blonde hair. There's the Billy Meyer case, a photographer from Switzerland that claimed to have contact with several beautiful aliens that started in the early 50s. While most people discount his photographs to be a hoax, the craft were round and disc-shaped, and the occupants looked Germanic. Then there's the George Adamski case, a Polish-born American citizen who also claimed to have photographed spaceships from other planets and says he met with friendly Nordic alien space brothers who also looked like typical Germans. While Adamski was also denounced in the media as a fraud, his photographs and video also resembled the round Vril craft that leaked documents from the KGB after the fall of the Soviet Union show to not only have a similar shape, but the same 3 round gravitational stabilizers below the craft. It's the same shaped UFO that was spotted hovering over Los Angeles in 1945 for several hours in the famous incident the newspapers called the Battle over Los Angeles, where not only thousands of people witnessed the craft hovering in the air, but thousands of rounds of ammunition were shot at it, seemingly having no effect. Keep in mind, this was during World War II, and while the craft did not appear to be armed, it might have been to show off the technology in an effort to bring an end to the war. Probably the most famous contactee case was the one involving Betty and Barney Hill, an American couple who claimed they were abducted in a rural portion of the state of New Hampshire, where, under hypnosis, Barney Hill not only described the alleged extraterrestrials as looking like an Irishman, but he used the word Nazi, saying that the occupants of the craft were Nazis.
You say there, did you say it was 1,000 feet away?
Oh no.
1,000 yards?
It doesn't look that far. It's very big. And it's not that far. And I can see it tilted toward me.
Tilted? And what does it look like now when you say tilted? Did you see it wings?
Looks like a big, big pancake with windows and rows of windows and lights of not light, just one huge light.
And rows of windows like a commercial plane?
Rows of windows. They're not like a commercial plane because they curve around to the size of this pancake. One person looks friendly. He's friendly looking. And he's looking at me over his right shoulder, and he's smiling. But that...
Could you see him clearly?
Yes, I thought...
What's his face like? What does it make you think of?
It's round. I think of a red-haired Irishman.
You saw him through this window? Or you said there was a row of windows.
It was a row of windows. Just a huge row of windows. And the evil face on the... He looks like a German Nazi.
He is a Nazi. Did he have on a uniform?
Yes.
What kind of uniform?
It was black.
Which brings us to the Washington, D.C. incident, where on July 12, 1952, a highly publicized sighting took place in the Capitol above the White House as a dozen saucer craft casually flew in the sky in another apparent demonstration of technology, or a show of force or technological superiority, which some claim convinced then-President Eisenhower to secretly meet with aliens, or Aryans, depending on who you ask. I don't doubt for a minute that the vast majority of people listening to this will have already made up their mind that there's no way that the US government met with anyone, be it aliens or Germans, because the vast majority of people also let the mainstream media do the thinking for them. And the media, up until now, has not yet acknowledged the existence of UFOs. That is, up until now.
So this is from the former head of Israel's space program, Chaim Ashed, who says that aliens have been in contact with the U.S. and with Israel. What does he refer to? The Galactic Federation?
Galactic Federation.
That he says has, you know, been in touch with Israel and the U.S. He also says that Donald Trump was going to reveal their existence,
but
then basically got talked out of it, I suppose.
Yeah, and look, he's 87 years old. According to him, he says he has nothing to lose. He's a decorated former Israeli general, former space security chief. He's been awarded a medal 3 separate times, 2 secretly, for actions that kept Israel safe. Clearly somebody who was regarded well by that government. Now, what he's saying is kind of crazy. He says that the cooperation of, there's a secret pact between the U.S. government and the Galactic Federation that the cooperation includes a secret underground base on Mars where there are American and alien representatives.
Last week, a high-ranking and distinguished former Israeli space security chief not only claimed that extraterrestrials exist and President Trump knows about it, but that a galactic federation also exists and is waiting to make official contact. Allegedly, contact has already been established long ago with governments of the world, since he claims that the United States already has military personnel in underground bases on Mars.
Well, this is quite a story, and it comes from the man who headed Israel's space security program for nearly 30 years. Chaim Eshed is making the extraordinary claim that the United States and Israel have been in contact with a group of aliens for years, not immigrants, but extraterrestrials. He has called them the Galactic Federation of Aliens, and he says President Trump is aware of the existence of these aliens and had been on the verge of revealing their secrets, he claims, but was asked not to do so by the Federation in order to prevent what he calls mass hysteria. Well, the retired general says the US and Israel have kept it from the public because, quotes, humanity isn't ready and the aliens don't want to reveal themselves until humanity can evolve, he says, and understand what space really is. Well, the good news is that he claims an agreement has been reached between the US government and the aliens, a contract to do experiments here. There's also, he says, a secret underground base on Mars where there are American and alien representatives. Now, this former head of a branch of Israel's defense ministry is 87. He was very well respected. He says he's come forward now in the hope that his news will be accepted as true. He notes that if he'd made these claims 5 years ago, he would have been hospitalized. But now he says, I've got nothing to lose. Well, so far, President Trump has not tweeted about this. Though, remember, a year ago, he did set up the Space Force as the fifth branch of the U.S. Armed Forces. Well, we did ask the White House, the Department of Defense, and Israeli officials to comment. So far, they have not responded to the NBC News request, and I wonder if they ever will.
The topic of a secret space program is not new and has been discussed for decades, though only recently being reported on in a serious way by the mainstream media. While the majority of the discussion about a potential galactic federation implies that all of the alleged aliens are a totally separate species from us, if they exist at all. But brave researchers from the time just before the internet era of social media have risked their lives disclosing what they believe had its roots, at least in part, involving events pertaining to World War II. One of these fearless researchers was named Vladimir Terzinski, and while he has vanished for about 20 years now, I'd like to remind the world of his efforts, which have impacted many researchers in the field that continue to push for full disclosure, including myself.
So Vladimir, welcome, and I'm very glad that you managed to make it.
Thank you very much for your invitation.
Now, Vladimir, I've looked at your credits and I'm terribly impressed. In fact, looking at what you've done in terms of education, I'm really surprised. Here you have a Bachelor of Science in Physics, you have a Master of Science in Electronics, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. You have brought on to me an awful lot of information about the about Nazi Germany and the technology that they had in the 40s. Now, I am absolutely astounded by the information that you have to share with us. You have brought on pictures. Could you please tell us about these pictures and what they actually are telling us?
Well, in one sentence, while researching UFOs in general and the terrestrial component of the alien presence in particular, namely secret terrestrial programs that have been dealing with anti-gravity and secret space programs for the last almost 100 years, I realized that a lot of these secret projects are covered up behind the alien smokescreen and later on laundered to the general public as an alien technology gift to us. And in order to pull the carpet from under the feet of the government, or let's call it the party line American ufology, I've been doing research on Nazi UFOs, on the 50 or more basically different models of crap that the Germans built before and during the Second World War, powered by every engine that was in production in Germany at that time, by piston engines, Wankel engines, turbojet engines, ramjet, pulse jets, rocket engines, and the final and most advanced models were powered by electromagnetogravitic drives. These are the most basically no moving part drives. But in order to convince someone that this massive research and development conspiracy, let's call it, and this secret space program run by the Germans has been on for all these years, actually the persistent rumors are that the Germans landed on the moon and Mars before the war ended, and later they were followed by many other secret programs, but we will talk about that probably in a future show. The Russians and the Americans landed on the moon and Mars in the late 40s and early 50s respectively. An Italian team landed on Mars in 56. Many superpowers have been actively pursuing secret space programs based on anti-gravity propulsion. But in order to convince someone of this, of the existence of this massive research and development conspiracy, one first has to be convinced of the existence of political and economic conspiracies in this world.
You talk about Germany already. Does this actually mention that Germany, before the Second World War, being involved in very, very advanced technology?
Yes, actually, these books mention a lot of extremely bizarre, almost science fiction military technologies. And the first book that mentions particularly the first several models of flying saucers that were built in Germany is the book Intercept UFO, or Intercept But Don't Shoot, by Renato Vesco.
Now, Renato Vesco, was he part of the Mussolini government?
Renato Vesco was actually a very leading figure in the Italian research and development effort. He was the research and development boss of the Italian Air Force. He may not have been a Werner von Braun, but he definitely was an extremely brilliant scientist and engineer. And besides that, Italians and Japanese were regularly briefed on all secret German developments during the war. So after the war, when he wrote the book, he knew exactly what he was writing about. Actually, he wrote and discussed in great detail the first several models of flying saucers that were built in Germany. This is the turbojet-powered flying saucer built by Schriever, diameter of about 30 feet, and the joint project, this was the first operational interceptor fighter saucer that was built by Belonzo, Mitte and Schriever. I have some photographs that were extremely rare to find. Many of these were pulled out of German libraries by our research associates and friends. Most of them are impossible to find in the United States. The third model that we talked about is a very interesting photograph done in 1952 over Mount Rainier in Washington State. And in my opinion, this is a flying Kugelblitz or ball lightning automatic anti-aircraft weapons platform that was captured by the Americans and test flown secretly from bases in the western United States and northwestern Canada. Later on, through German sources, we have discovered not only turbojet-powered craft, but these are rocket-powered craft with rocket engines of the V2 type, and the subsequent model of Mitte. These two craft had an exoatmospheric capability, and they could easily go in orbit around the Earth. This is a very interesting drawing of a saucer-type dreadnought, a 60-yard diameter. This is about 200 feet diameter interplanetary craft that had huge sleeping compartments. It is basically 10 stories tall. drawings were published in Germany by a little secret society there.
What would have been the purpose of that Schriever flying disc here?
It had definitely an interplanetary objective, because a flying saucer that can circle the Earth in 1.5 hours does not need sleeping compartments. You don't have to sleep between during your flight. Mm-hmm. Basically, the longest distance you can travel around the planet is 1-2 hours at the most.
Right.
So obviously sleeping compartments on such a massive scale would be needed only for a craft that would land on the moon, that would stay there for a long time and come back.
So you're actually saying that the Germans pre-World War II were refining the technology in order to actually travel to a different planet?
Exactly. These two models are capable of going in orbit around the Earth and probably going in an extended elliptical orbit toward the Moon. This huge craft is capable of getting into orbit around the Moon and landing on the planet. And these were actually the most primitive of the models that the Germans built. 2 months ago, I received through some private channels a secret documentary film made by the German secret society, the Thule Gesellschaft, something like an equivalent of the Illuminati Society here. The title of this documentary, two-hour documentary film, is UFOs, the Third Reich Strikes Back. Mm-hmm. This is the emblem of this secret society. They were basically the ideologues of the Third Reich. But once these things invented, they were shared later by the superpowers. They cannot be disinvented, to use Daniel Bell's interesting
one thought
expression.
Keeps coming back to me, and that is almost world supremacy. I'm looking at this and I'm going, what's the incentive, what's the reasoning behind trying to refine such technology?
Well, it gives man an ability to go to the moon, to explore the planets of the solar system, to go beyond the solar system. Some of these larger crafts were definitely able to go beyond the solar system, as we shall see very soon. The first row of photographs, actually this is a very small part, this is maybe a third of all the documentary photographs shown in the German documentary video. These are interceptor fighter craft of the Vril series that have never been written about in any other source in the world literature so far. They were about 30 feet in diameter and extremely maneuverable. Their speed was almost 3 times the speed of sound. For them, Allied bombers and fighters were basically sitting ducks. Renato Vesco, in his book, depicts about 3 dozen attacks of flying saucers on Allied bomber formations with devastating consequences, and these all were attacks of the previous and more primitive craft. These craft were developed in the very last years of the war, 44-45. Mm-hmm. This subsequent line here are the 25 meter diameter, which is about 75 meter diameter, 30 feet tall tank killers, the craft of the Honeyball type. We've never seen before UFOs with tank turrets attached underneath.
Oh yeah.
We see different models of tank turrets. Actually, these are standard issue turrets for the German Panther tank and the Panzer IV tank. Later models developed in the 60s from the German colony on the South Pole, which is another very controversial issue. Admiral Byrd led an expedition to the South Pole in 47, trying to wipe out the Germans, but he was beaten very badly. In just 2.5 weeks he had to leave the continent because the Germans had perfected all these craft. On the bottom row we have the most interesting examples here. This is an original drawing of a cigar-shaped mothership of 330 feet length that was carrying inside itself one of the tank killer craft and three of the interceptor fighter saucers.
So how big was this cigar-shaped craft?
It was about 90 to 100 feet in diameter and 330-350 feet length. This is a football field size craft. the most interesting, and this could be photographs of German crafts in flight well after the end of the World War, probably flown from their base on the South Pole.
In what year was that, approximately?
These photographs were taken 42, these are 43, these are 44 and 45. These were taken after the war. The drawings date from 1943. The biggest craft that the Germans built was the 74-meter diameter, this is about 220 feet diameter, flying saucer of the Honeyboot 3 type. This is a naval warfare craft with, we can see here in these turrets, triple guns of a naval caliber, three turrets on the underbelly and a fourth turret on the top. This was a craft made for huge naval warfare. According to this film, the only craft was taken and flown from the Earth to Mars by a huge crew of basically volunteers and self-sacrificial crew of Germans and Japanese. And it landed on January 15, 1946, after 8 months of flight. They departed April 45, a month before the war ended in Germany. And they crash landed on Mars. The gravity field there is too weak, so the craft couldn't make it real nice in the landing. The most interesting things about this craft are that these are free energy devices. These are basically flying converters of gravitational energy that convert the energy of the geomagnetic field of Earth into the electromagnetic energy of flight. So these craft never had to tank. They never had to replenish their reservoirs. They had actually tapped into the inexhaustible reservoir of free gravitational energy of the planet. This is something even more taboo as a topic than the fact that the Germans developed all these 50 different models of craft. Because if one is able to go basically for free to the moon and Mars without using a single gram of fuel, free riding on the gravitational currents of our solar system, then a lot of our present-day economy about, well, we all have to pay for the fuel when we tank our cars, right, becomes obsolete.
So let's discuss this in much more depth. In your estimation, where is all this technology stored?
Well, Germans were not the first one to develop this technology. John Keely presented his anti-gravity flying bathtub, as if we may call it like this, a funny looking contraption. He sat on it, rose noiselessly, accelerated to a very fast speed, and came back and landed in front of the stunned eyes of the war ministry here in the United States in the 1860s. They said, well, we can't find any possible use of this device.
Where was Nazi Germany? I mean, when did Nazi Germany actually come into play?
There are persistent rumors that the Germans were contacted by one extraterrestrial race, as have been all governments of all superpowers all throughout the terrestrial history. But that particular race was the cause of this tremendous explosion, this cornucopia of German killing machines and advanced weapons technologies that had absolutely no precursor whatsoever in previous terrestrial developments. So basically from the 20s and 30s, Germany was actively pursuing research in rocket propulsion, in anti-gravity propulsion, in free energy devices that were later combined with their flying saucers to make these formidable weapons. Later on, this technology was used by the secret powers, by Russians, by the superpowers, namely the Russians, the British, the Americans, the French. Even the rumors are that the Israelis and the Brazilians have their own anti-gravity craft in operation these days.
I have a question that's burning me. That question is, why didn't the Germans at at the time when they were actually losing the war, why did they not actually throw all the technology that they had, such as this, and just as much as possible obliterate the enemy?
Oh, well, actually, we are getting here very deep into the political and banking conspiracies behind these wars. A war is not meant to obliterate the enemy. A war is meant to load the credit card of the government by forcing it to buy more armaments. If you obliterate the enemy, there wouldn't be any future enemy for the future war that is coming. Okay. So basically, all these wars have been orchestrated and choreographed by the same banking, world banking elite that has been funding both sides in a conflict.
But in what way would that benefit Nazi Germany?
Well, actually, from the mid-30s, the Germans were actively involved in their South Polar research. From the late 30s, they started building their underground bases on the South Pole. And by 45, they have moved, according to some rumors, from a few hundred thousand to up to a million of slave labor. And Nazi scientists and SS officers down there in this huge underground colony that later on engaged in space exploration and genetic research. According to persistent rumors, basically all the genetic research going on in the underground labs these days in the United States has been started in Nazi Germany. I know a very good movie producer who was working on one UFO documentary, and he saw in a military base here in the United States a documentary film, 30-minute film about genetic research on humans, crossbreedings between humans and animals in Nazi Germany 50 years ago in the concentration camps. So the South Polar colony had primarily its goals in space exploration and genetic research. So basically the Germans were saving all these devices for the defense of the South Polar colony, which Admiral Byrd learned unexpectedly that they had made an impenetrable fortress there.
So why did we not find out about what happened to Admiral Byrd?
Well, there is an interesting interview in an Argentinian paper. He probably gave that on his way back from the South Pole before the security lid was clamped on him, where he said the next world war would be fought with an extremely powerful adversary that has the ability to fly from pole to pole. He was obviously talking about the German craft that obliterated his aviation. All his planes were shot down in less than 3 weeks. He came down with three carrier fleets, with three formations of carriers and support craft and 4,000 troops, and was beaten in less than 3 weeks and hastily retreated from
after the Second World War. Nazi Germany, obviously, after its defeat, was there a tacit agreement that they could keep that technology and refine it further? I'm surprised that...
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, we have to keep in mind that the Rothschilds and all the other European bankers have been financing for 300 years both sides in every conflict. And this is the best way for them to have the government load their credit cards and so then to live off these enormous interest on these loans. During the Second World War, Nazi Germany was financed by basically the Wall Street and the American banking community and the European banking community, as was the Russian Bolshevik Revolution.
Are you saying that German bankers, namely some of the big families, were behind the revolution in Russia?
Well, the Russian Revolution was financed by Wall Street, by the Vatican, and by South African gold. It was financed, it was planned, financed, paid for, carried, and later on Wall Street helped Russia in the first 20 years of the most difficult 20th, basically in the 20s and 30s, by propping up the Russian economy. So what happened to the German South Polar colony? I think that Admiral Byrd probably concluded the first tacit agreement or condominium agreement between the Americans and the Germans, namely that let's not interfere into each other's affairs. Mm-hmm. Maybe even we would do some trading. We would be trading with crude materials, raw materials, bolts, nuts, metal profiles, raw materials, and you would be giving us some of your astonishing technology. This is according to Renato Vesco in his book Intercept But Don't Shoot, and according to the book of Genesis.
These are fictionalized.
The second, yes, but this is a documentary, highly engineering, highly specialized report on the German anti-gravity research and development. I have a lot of information about secret collusion between the United States and Russia, all behind the smoke screen of the Cold War.
But Germany, what's Germany's involvement in the Cold War?
Official West Germany, very little. Basically, they were the strongest member of NATO. Mm-hmm. But the secret German colony on the South Pole was basically working hand in hand with the secret Soviet-American space program. It is rumored that when the Russians and Americans landed on a joint flight to the moon with a probably American-made saucer in the late 40s, not only that they discovered the German swastika flags already planted in the most famous craters on the moon, but they spent a few days as guests to the German ex-Nazi moon base.
Yeah. So you have so much information, it's staggering. In fact, I'm absolutely overwhelmed by all the information that you've managed to share with us in such short time. And I would like to be able to invite you for further shows where we can go much deeper into how all this Nazi Germany, German involvement came about and where it's really taking us to ultimately.
For those that have been researching the subject of a secret space program for some time now, it is difficult to not come to the conclusion that many of the television programs and Hollywood movies attempt to mirror aspects of a hidden reality, albeit in a way that only discloses certain perspectives of the scenario while keeping other parts covert. It seems likely that if NASA made it to the moon using conventional rockets, which were also developed by the Germans, and if the US and Russia managed to build and maintain an international space station in orbit, then surely there are also other space programs that the general public is not aware of. If the recent revelations made by the former Israeli space security chief are true, and the United States already has a presence in underground bases on Mars, then it's not so much of a new disclosure as it is a validation of what researchers like Vladimir Terzinski have been saying for decades. My name is Robert Sepper. I'm an anthropologist. My published work is available on Amazon, as well as through various other major book outlets. They make a great gift. If you'd like to support my work, you could do that through patreon.com. There should be a link in the description section for those that are interested. I appreciate it. Thank you. Please hit the like button and subscribe for future updates. As always, I look forward to reading your comments, so please leave me your thoughts below. Please have a wonderful weekend, and I hope to see you again soon.